Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special episode of TFL podcast.
Podcast.
Yeah, our new podcast, our car podcast. And we've got a very special guest. Say hello to Moto Man from Moto Man TV.
Hello, Roman. And hello, TFL viewers and listeners.
Now, last time you were on this podcast, we were very popular.
We were very popular because we hit on a nerve, apparently, of where are all of the different car manufacturers going? And we got a lot of good insight from everybody.
Yeah, and today we're actually doing something I think that's just as interesting. We're going to be answering a basic question, which is, should you buy a new car now or wait? But in order to answer that question, I've got a really cool list here of the top 10 cars, Moto Man, that are selling over sticker by how much and which ones are the most expensive.
You're kind of leaving or sandbagging the audience, I should say, because you're not telling them that we're going to have a discussion about the economy as well.
We are going to talk about the economy because, look, I think this is an interesting time. You know, there's that Chinese proverb, right?
Interesting.
Yes.
Whenever someone says interesting to me, I don't say that. I think of that as good.
No, it's probably not good. It probably is not good, yeah. Indeed. So let's start with this list. Because I think people are interested in what cars are selling for. But before we start with the list, let's talk about what it used to be like to buy a car. Because the thing has completely turned out its head.
A regular car or something special?
Just any car in America at one point. Let's put the Porsches and the Lamborghinis.
Okay, put aside the GT3s and that kind of stuff. It was very simple. Let's say for the sake of discussion, I was looking for a sedan, which people don't want anymore, but back in the day they did.
A Honda Accord, exactly.
Or a Nissan Altima, or a Toyota Camry.
Yep.
If I wanted to buy one of those cars,
pre-COVID,
pre-virus, normal times, I would go and I would drive all the cars.
Because that dealer had them.
I would drive the car, and then I would decide which car I'd want, and then I would either go and beat up the dealer or have the dealer beat me up. Or if I was somebody that, frankly, was a member of Costco, I would go and try to get a quote through Costco. And through one of those avenues, you would end up on a car like an Accord, an Altima, and a Camry. You'd pay about $100 over invoice. That's usually what they were selling those cars for.
So if MSRP, let's just say it's an Accord. Let's say MSRP was 35, which is a fair number for an Accord.
You were getting about 8% off the car, 5 to 8% depending on which model of car. If you got the one that's got all the fancy stuff, you're getting 8% off. If you get the one that's the $21,000 price leader, you got about 5% off.
And I suppose it depended on how picky you were, right? How if you were very picky about the features and the colors.
Let's be honest. If you're buying a Camry, you're not picky about anything.
Oh, ouch. I'm sure there are a lot of people here who think the Camry is, or their Accord is, their dream car. And so
is their blender in their kitchen.
All right. But anyway, if you weren't picky and if you were like, hey, I'm cool with this color versus that color, then you could actually do really well and you felt like you got a deal and you felt like, you know, you could put that thing to bed for the next few years until
now,
it was time to get
to complicate
the next one.
Things, there were times when you'd have like, you and I go on these drives, and you and I always drive the fancy one. They never bring
the most
basic
expensive
one for
with
us,
all the
with
bells
everything.
And whistles. Yeah.
Even with Camrys that were $38,000 with a black roof and the sport wheels. But the car no one buys is the one that has nothing in it. It's usually the middle model that has all the volume. So what the car manufacturers do is they artificially lower the supply of the fancy one so they don't have to put a lot of incentive on it. But then the cheap one, the one nobody wants, like I'll make it up, a Honda Pilot two-wheel drive front front-wheel drive with no TV screens in the back, no one buys that car. So the one that they have on the lot, not only can you get it 100 over invoice, but Honda adds what's called trunk money. They put money in the trunk, meaning they give money to the dealer to sell the car. So let's say the sticker was, I'll make it up, $35,000 for that car, but you could end up driving it away for $26,000. That's another aspect of it.
And this is what people got used to.
Very much used
to. Now, some people did pay sticker, but usually most people, you know, because there were those giant blow-up men at the, you know, it's Toyota-thon, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the American way. You got to get a deal. You can't sit there and just lay down and pay what they're asking for.
And then the manufacturers would also do their own financing. And so you could get pretty cheap financing or pretty easily attainable financing.
That gets into a larger, I mean, if the audience that knows me knows I am a major Dave Ramsey no-debt Nazi. And this will get into a larger part of that discussion later on down okay. in this discussion.
But I'm saying there were also
absolutely,
you know, financing
and that,
deals.
Frankly, that's what helps sells cars. Excuse me, but I would argue, and this is a little bit off topic, that brands like Lincoln, the only reason they still exist is because of captive finance companies within their manufacturer. If there wasn't a captive finance company that was providing cheap leases or cheap subvented rates on the loans, those cars wouldn't exist anymore, because people don't say, oh my God, I'm going to spend $85,000 on a Navigator or $50,000 on a Corsair. They're just not excited about it. There's so many other choices. The only reason why, at least I believe, someone goes in and buys a Corsair is because it's $379 a month. That's why.
Yeah. And it's got all the stuff they want. And then they're like, hey, this car will do.
Even though it's a gussied up Ford Escape.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. I think I agree with you.
Yes.
All right. So that's the way it used to be. And then COVID happened. And then, of course, the world turned upside down. And
more ways than one.
Yes. Yes. And inventory dried up. And you had all kinds of supply chain issues. And manufacturers were no longer able to build cars because of not just supply chain, but chip and worker issues. And all of a sudden, cars became very expensive. In fact, not that long ago, you could pay more for a used car than you could for a new car. That was not unheard of.
Actually, now you still can pay more
for a used car. But it's the used car market.
Should we give the audience a little bit of backstory on how the manufacturers, some of this is self-inflicted?
I would love that. Let's go for
it. Okay, so let's. So my background, as you know, I was in tech for many years. Worked for Apple for many years. Worked in the mobile internet many years. And you can imagine chips are a big part of this.
Yes.
And you hear even the salesman at the car dealership, oh, there's a chip shortage. I guarantee he probably can't give you a lot of the detail of it.
You know, I can't even. I've heard like number. Here's something I can't even pin down, Motoman. Right. This is. I was like, I've heard anywhere from there's a couple hundred chips to a couple thousand chips in a car. I don't even know how many chips are in a car.
Well, it depends on the car, and some of the manufacturers are doing some very interesting accounting, shall we say, of the chips. Like, for example, Porsche. When they engineered the Porsche Taycan, it was always engineered to have an electric steering wheel adjustment. Well, they can't get enough chips, so they went and re-engineered the steering wheel now where it has a manual adjustment because they don't want to waste chips to make the steering wheel move.
So let me ask you this. Right now we have on loan a Hummer EV.
Yes.
And I was driving it.
That probably has 85,000 chips.
It probably has a lot of chips. But here's something interesting. So this truck costs $110,000.
Wow. You got a discount from the 112.
No, it's not. It's GM. So it belongs to General Motors. Or maybe 112. So whatever. It's expensive, right? And I'm driving it, and I'm like, it's pretty cold out, so let me put the window up.
Yeah.
It doesn't have auto up.
In a $112,000 vehicle.
So I'm thinking, why would it not have auto up? And the only reason I can come up with is because you need a chip to have that auto up.
Well,
so
that's more of a relay thing. That's not a chip thing.
You don't think
thing.
That's a chip thing?
It's how the circuit completes for it to go auto up or just operate either wherever you want to stop it.
As far as I know, it doesn't have auto up.
Because it's a detent that completes the relay in order for the thing to go up.
And when we bought our ZR2,
yeah,
it had button for the heated steering wheel, but the button did not function.
That would be a chip issue.
Okay.
Anyway, so what we were saying before was we were going on to sort of what happened.
Yep.
Part of this, very few issues related to this is self-inflicted, but one of these is. And it's a matter of, I like to say, do you have balls the size of pumpkins?
Okay.
And most car companies didn't in March of 2020. Like most businesses, you're like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this happen. Governments are telling us we can't go anywhere. We don't understand what's going to happen with the economy. So most companies, obviously publicly held companies, they have to give certain guidance about where they're going. So they're looking at this, and they're not just saying we have to give guidance to the market. We have to give guidance to our suppliers. So they said, you know what? All bets are off. We said we're going to have a boom year this year. Forget it. We're cutting all of our guidance in half. So they went from a 17 million run rate for U.S. car sales, and it would obviously be more for other parts of the world too, but 17 million have decided to cut it in half. Well, that's not just going to analysts at Wall Street in the city in London. It's going to the chip suppliers, all of the suppliers for tires, all that kind of stuff.
Secondary market.
Exactly. And they say, guess what? We said we need this much for 2020. Instead, we did this much. The tire people, they get screwed because who else is going to buy their tires? The guys who are selling leather, who else is going to buy all that leather? The chip manufacturers. That's kind of like doing a deal with a mob. They said, number one,
we'll sell it to Sony.
It's literally like the five crime families because there's only a couple of different chip that can do fab. In the world of technology, there's something called fab, and this is semiconductor fabricators. And what they do is they create chips that are designed by companies like Apple, Samsung. Actually, Samsung also makes their own chips as well. And there's basically a handful of these companies. One of the reasons why Taiwan is such a global political question right now is the largest semiconductor fab in the world is Taiwan Semiconductor. Now, granted, they've said they've changed some of their industry and they're doing some of it manufacturing in Arizona. But all the car manufacturers, it wasn't just General Motors or Volkswagen, every one of them said, we're cutting our guidance. And the chip manufacturers, unlike the tire people, said, well, are you sure you want to do this? And the manufacturers said, yes. And then the fab people went back to them and said, you realize if you take this capacity out, we're going to fill it with somebody else. If you change your mind, it will be years before you get that capacity back, that manufacturing capacity back. And they said, we're sure none of this is going to happen. Sure enough, sales not only continued, it spiked. But by that time, all of the semiconductor manufacturers offered that capacity to the Apples of the world, to the Samsungs of the world. And they took it because everybody was buying TVs. Everybody was buying computers.
Everybody's home, right? What are you going to do? You want a new TV. You're at home and you're stuck.
Exactly.
You want a new computer because now you're Zooming.
So all of the car manufacturers had to go to the back of the line and wait for that capacity. Okay. So here we are over two years later, and it's just starting to trickle back. But Ford, just this week, gave the guidance of we're still going to have a hard time delivering cars. They had something like 10,000 Ford vehicles that are still sitting, not fully manufactured, can't be shipped to dealers because they're missing chips. So anyway, that's the backstory.
Yeah, and the other thing that I read, I believe, is that the chips in the auto industry aren't the newest and the greatest. They use like chips that have been around a long time because they have to have a certain amount of durability that they're not sure about the newest chips.
It depends on the application, but yes, for the most part, it is older because everything has to be redundant. Think of it like we talked about airplanes last time we got together.
Yep.
You have two electrical systems, two fuel delivery systems. In a car, it's more about mission critical, so you can't have the latest, like the A15 or A16 bionic chip they just introduced on the iPhone 14. You can't have that. And frankly, they don't really design their own chips. It's somebody else doing that. I would argue, we're kind of getting off the plantation a little bit here, but if the car manufacturers were smart and they learned from this lesson, they would band together and they would create their own company that is nothing but a fab that supplies chips only to the car manufacturers.
Yeah,
and if they were smart, they would put the manufacturing in the U.S. and Western Europe and cut off China.
So a year ago, we did the story about all these Chevy, or maybe they were GM vehicles that were sitting in this parking lot. And the parking lot, ironically, was that of the old chip factory that GM owned that they shut down. They were now using the store vehicles that they couldn't sell or ship because they didn't have chips.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And Ford, I take my hat off. You know I'm not a Ford guy, but I take my hat off to Ford for the way they run their business. And Jim Farley, I not only think he's a good car guy, but he's a good businessman, and he's upfront. He's willing to disclose a lot of this. And the fact that he's disclosed that he's got a number of these very, very popular vehicles that he can't deliver to dealers because some of the components aren't finished yet.
Mm.
And then, of course, this is not the...
We're talking Broncos, Mavericks.
Exactly.
Lightnings.
They've been, again, not a Ford guy, but they've been very focused. They're not wide anymore. They're very deep. But before we press on to the list, I also want to just to give the disclaimer here. The chip thing is a big issue.
There are
other large issues. I just want to say the chip one was more self-inflicted.
We're not going to do this list like all in one go. So we'll keep talking, but let me kind of sprinkle these cars in.
Let's do it.
So at number 10, this is an interesting car. And actually, we just came from a Mercedes program here in Denver.
We did.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in the next episode.
Yes, we will.
So stay tuned next week. Come back next week for I think it'll be a very insightful conversation.
We're probably going to get into an argument.
Anyway, number 10 on the list is the Mercedes-Benz GLB, which we actually drove, but we drove the EQB.
Yes, right? We drove the EQB.
The electric version of it. And that yes. is that. There's no embargo on that. That's a dealership right now. We can talk about that if you want yes. to talk about that, which we can. But the GLB...
Well, Tommy and I drove that one in Germany.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, we did.
So the GLB is the gasoline-powered one.
Yes.
And it is selling at 19% over sticker. Now, this list came from iccars.com. Mm. They compiled it at a 7,650 additional market adjustment. Which is what
so where are they getting that information? Is it self-reported or is it something they're actually getting transactions from insurance companies? What are they doing?
I think I would be lying if I told you where. I don't know.
Okay, so we'll take it on good faith.
Okay,
this
it says a recent IC Cars analyst of 1.9 million new car listings found the average new car vehicles priced at 10% above.
Oh, so these are listings of cars that are on offer, not so much transaction
exactly,
prices.
Yes.
Okay, so let's call this is the ask.
This is the ask.
This
yeah.
is the ask.
So on average, the Mercedes GLB is being asked or sold. I shouldn't say sold for because it's not being sold. It could be sold for a discount. But according to these guys, 19% over sticker.
So this is a good point for you and I to give this. You and I agree on something. We discussed this at lunch. Let's give this disclaimer. At no point is it a good idea to pay over sticker for any car, whether it's a GLB or a Z06.
No way.
You will never get that money back, period, the end.
Yeah. I guess, well, that's another thing that's happened, right? So there are cars like, for instance, the Lightning that we recently purchased,
yes.
right, where they are selling way over sticker. So a lot of people who are, either wealthy or smart or think they're smart, are buying vehicles and flipping them, right? That's become not just dealers.
Again, another reason why I respect Ford, they've put a restriction. You can't sell that car until 2 years or something.
No,
like
not
that.
The Lightning. You can.
The Lightning's on that list.
Yeah, no.
Maybe
what they did was so the first batch was 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, there are no restrictions on the first mm-hmm. batch. So it could be that the next year allocations – those might have some kind of a – and if you guys want to fact check us, please
Yeah, why
do.
Don't you guys fact check us? Because yeah. we've got a guy at the airport who yeah. just got one.
Yeah.
And he had to sign a document with – and it's not with a dealer. It was with Ford. You can't sell the car
it
for
could,
2 years. So I'd love to know
it
from
could
them.
Be the, it could be the 2023s. Ours is a 2022.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
I don't pretend to be a Ford expert. You're the Ford expert.
The one thing I do know is if we're talking about the Hummer EV, GM just basically made the customers, which is weird because it should – why are they putting the – onus on the customer. Shouldn't it be on the dealer? But anyway, they made the customer sign an agreement that if they resell it within 6 months, they will void their battery warranty. Not the warranty on the entire vehicle, but the battery warranty.
Aren't they doing something similar with a Z06?
I think it's very similar, yeah. Z06, yeah. So, which I think is also weird that they're basically telling their customers, not their dealers, because let's face it, the first point of contact with these cars is always going to be the dealership.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example, okay? We have a Bronco, right?
You still have the Bronco.
We still, yeah.
We sold everything else, but you got the Bronco.
We held on to the Bronco, yeah, because we need a good off-roader, and so we needed a car to use as a comparison. And by the way, we will be doing a video. I'm a little worried about it because we're going to go up a pretty hard trail. We just got a Hummer EV from GM, like I said, and we're going to compare it to the Bronco tomorrow.
I'm excited to drive it because I haven't driven one.
I'm terrified to take it off-road, $112,000 truck. Anyway, and a wide truck at that. So when I went and picked up this Bronco from the dealership, right?
Yeah.
I was just kind of curiously asking the salesman if he's got one on order. And he said, yes, he had five of them on order. because he wasn't sure. This is what he told me, what color he wanted. And you know what that is, right, Motoman? That is the dealership having their salespeople order five Broncos that they will then never take delivery of the salespeople, but then they will resell. So I find it weird that GM is going after the actual end customer and not trying to control the dealership, mm-hmm. which is, I'm not saying all dealers are going to do this, but my gut would tell me that most dealers are mm-hmm. going to find ways around this and are going to find ways to, and we can have this long discussion about whether that's cool or not, mm-hmm. right? Because we do live in a free market society. Mm-hmm.
I do take my hat off to them in trying to contain people doing some profit taking. Like, for example, Ford. Let's go back. People are going to think that I like Fords with all this Ford talk.
You are, yeah. You're very Fordy today.
I'm very Fordy today. So as people have seen my show, I featured a car on our show, a Ford GT, a 2024 GT. Now, we had gotten that car through the original program of you have to apply and you have to show why you are worthy of the car.
That's the John Cena.
Yeah, and we were awarded the
car. We could talk about that too.
We couldn't sell the car for 2 years. The car then subsequently has been sold after owning it for 2 years. But to do that, that was a great example of how to perfectly manage people doing the profit taking.
Right. So,
think how much work that is for the car manufacturer. I look at this idea of like limiting the warranty. That's just short circuiting the process, and ultimately, I think they're going to shoot themselves in the foot.
So let's talk about this because I do want to do this little aside. So the way that Ford sold, and it's still selling the GT. So let's face it, they're still selling it.
They're basically at the end with those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're still being delivered.
People are still being delivered. Yep.
So basically, the way that it worked is you basically had to apply mm-hmm. to Ford to be able to purchase one of those cars. And I believe they were worth $300,000. Am I wrong?
They started at $350,000, and by the end, like the car we got was $660,000.
So you would go to.
But that was with $115,000 Heritage livery paint job.
Beautiful.
Only color that's painted in house at Magna.
Really? Well,
the rest of them were painted elsewhere.
And they're built in Canada at Magna.
Magna.
Yeah.
So they're effectively Canadian cars.
And Magna, one of our sponsors. So thank you, Magna.
Thank you, Magna. Larry, good man.
They sponsor our truck and EV channel. So how cool is that? Anyway, people don't know, but Magna builds a lot of really cool cars, including the G-Wagon.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
BMW
Z4. Yeah.
Some Porsches. They make the dampers in your what is that? GM with the Z something, Z71.
Okay.
What pickup truck did you just sell?
Oh, ZR2.
ZR2, they make the dampers in that.
Okay. So you had to apply, and then the criteria was, were you somebody that was either famous or an influencer or had some kind of following of some sort?
Or did you have a collection of Fords?
Or did you have a collection
of
Fords?
That actually helped you a lot.
Bought other, you had to show that you had,
yep.
like Ferrari did that too, right?
Yep.
Especially on some of the special Ferraris, you had to have owned multiple Ferraris to even be eligible.
Ferrari is very different, though.
Let's put a Ferrari aside.
Yeah.
All right. Ford is more on our world than Ferrari is. So anyway, so one of those people was John Cena. The guy, former
wrestler or something like that.
Yeah, mixed martial. Was he mixed martial art? No, he was.
One of those things.
He was just like a regular wrestler, right? WWE. Yeah. So and now he's a big movie star. So he bought one and then he flipped it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ford sued him.
And he lost.
No, he won.
No, he lost. They got the car back.
You sure? I thought he won that lawsuit.
No, he got the car back. Well, they got the car back.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he won that lawsuit.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, so that he was one of the people who immediately flipped it. And this is the process that Motoman is talking about.
Yes.
And now GM is trying to do something similar.
But it's labor intensive.
Yeah, it is.
Very labor intensive.
With the Ford GT, it doesn't matter. There's not
I
that
think
many.
Ford is doing, they're trying to do a lesser version of it with the Lightning and some of their other cars. In order to, again, keep people from flipping the cars so the actual end
users. So should they be doing this or should they not? Should they just
I think on certain cars they should.
Really?
I really do.
You're not a free market guy.
No, I am a free market guy. I'm a big believer in, hey, man, if the market demands it and they're willing to pay, then sell it to them for what they want. But what I'm starting to see is, and I learned this sadly the hard way, with the GR Corolla, as a matter of fact. I'm very excited about the Toyota GR Corolla.
Like great car.
A car I want. And they're usually not my kind of car.
Yeah, especially what's the top edition? The
Morizo.
Morizo, yeah.
The extra 20 pounds of torque makes all the difference in the world.
And that
car's
carbon
badass.
Fiber, yeah.
I love that
roof,
car.
Yeah, it's cool.
So they got the three versions. They got the base,
the circuit,
the core, the circuit, and the Morizo. And so we went to the thing where they launched it in Long Beach.
Yep.
that episode did really well for me. Then they showed us the Marizo at that Toyota Palooza thing they do every year in Dallas.
Yep.
And that episode did well for me. So here we finally get to drive the car. I'm super excited. I'm thinking, man, I'm going to get tons of views. Nobody watched the episode.
Yeah, we had very few people watch ours. I don't know why that was.
I saw. And yeah, so it just, you know,
just
what I did?
Fell flat.
I put up a poll on my YouTube channel, and I said, why did you guys not watch this episode? And I gave them a couple of choices. Choice one was, I'm not interested in the car. Choice two was, there were too many episodes the day you launched it because it was the embargo.
Yep.
And choice three was other, and let me know.
Yeah.
40% I'm not interested in the car, 40% there were too many episodes, and then all the comments were, I'm not interested in this car because I'm never going to be able to get it because it's going to sell for over sticker.
That's fascinating. That really is. That's fascinating.
And it's killing a great car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know.
Or at least the excitement of a great car. So they will sell every one of them to make.
Look, here's kind of my thinking on this, all right? We've had a Hummer EV on order now for a long time because of we didn't order it, but one of our viewers ordered it. Mm-hmm. And then he said, do you want it? And like with the Bronco, we said, yes, we want to buy it and we'll do it as a charity shout out. We'll buy it. And then, you know, you pick the charity and we'll thank you.
Yeah.
It was built like 4 months ago and it's been sitting in, I guess, Detroit for a long time. And we don't know what's going on with it. So I haven't talked
here locally or somebody.
It was through a local dealer, but I haven't talked about it because I didn't know what the situation was. So I hate to overpromise and then underdeliver.
Yeah.
So I'd rather not talk about it. So
totally understand.
So, and then I was thinking to myself, you know, this car is one of those cars that's not really a vehicle that truck, I should say. This truck is one of those trucks that not people don't need this thing. They want it, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of competes in my mind directly with like a G-Wagon, right? It becomes a toy.
Oh, completely.
You see what I'm saying? And so I'm thinking to myself, if it's a toy and for whatever reason people are ordering them and it's taking a long time. Now, this is, you know, this thing was originally ordered over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. At what point do people just kind of throw up their hands and say to themselves, you know what? Instead of getting the Hummer EV, I'm going to just forget it. It's taking too long. I'm going to get myself a G-Wagon. I'm going to get myself a GT3. Or, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of cars that you could get that are toys that now start to compete against it. It's not
so
like
a little bit behind the scenes. This is where we get into some of the economics of the car business.
Yeah.
GM has created a toy. The G-Wagon continues to this day because it is a toy. As a matter of fact, the granular details of the way the locks sound on that G-Wagon.
No, I know. It's incredible.
They kept it, that's old technology. They kept it in there because people buy it because of that sound.
Yeah, vault-like would be the
these
best.
Are, exactly. So these are the kind of things that are very – they're outliers of their customer base. So when you're in a situation where you're running a car company – and you're getting a finite amount of chips to build the cars, you start saying to yourself, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to make a lot of money on these $112,000
trucks,
Hummers.
Yep.
But guess what? I might make $10,000 on that one car because that car is probably very expensive to build. I guarantee you they lose money on those things, the overall project. However, if I were to take the chips that thing requires and put them into the Escalade, which I'm going to sell $25,000 a year,
make more money on.
I'm going to make $15,000 a copy guaranteed. Which one am I going to do?
Escalade.
That's what's happening.
Ah.
And this is me reading the tea leaves.
Right.
No one has told me this is the case, but it's pretty easy to see that's what these guys are doing.
So they're willing to walk away from a sale because, A, they're losing money on the thing.
Yeah.
And B, it doesn't matter because they could put those chips into a vehicle that they're going to
exactly.
make money on.
Go to any car manufacturer and try to buy their cheap car. They're not going to sell it to you.
Well,
they don't care.
That opens up another question for me, and I want to ask you this, all right? Usually in the past, and we can talk about this in the context of Porsche going public, right, mm-hmm. which it is going to go public.
29th.
Yeah. Or Ferrari going public, which it went public
a couple of years ago.
A few years ago, right? It used to be that these very, I'm going to call them niche car companies, right, mm-hmm. were very strong brands but didn't make, you know, a lot of money because they didn't sell a lot of cars, right?
Yeah.
Ferrari did not. But over the last 2 years or 3 years, that has completely flipped on its head. You've got companies like Tesla now that now they're manufacturing, I think it's almost 1 million units. But before they were doing this, right, they were tiny in terms of manufacturing scale compared to Toyota or Ford or GM. And yet their market cap was much higher than any of the traditional car companies.
There's two different things going on there.
Explain, please.
Porsche, I would argue the Porsches of the world, old world car manufacturers, they started becoming very profitable. Small volume car manufacturers started becoming very profitable in the early 2000s because they found the SUV.
The Cayenne.
Good, bad, or indifferent. You and I don't really agree with that, but that's how they started making money. And then you started seeing a guy like Elon come into the car business. And I'm a tech guy. I'm one of the few people that do what we do that has a huge amount of respect for Elon, even though I'm not a huge Tesla car fan. And that's where we get into the second issue. Even though Porsche is printing money, they literally are the most profitable car company in the world. Their valuation is nowhere near what a Tesla or a Rivian is because they're valued as an old world or middle technology company.
A legacy company.
Exactly. So right now, and this is probably getting a lot of inside baseball, they've had to price their IPO somewhere between 75 and 82 euros. That's probably half what it would have been if they did it a year ago. Because the market is putting downward pressure on the overall value of a profitable middle technology company, where you look at Elon's company or you look at Rivian from their internal investors, because not exactly the situation, same situation, but you look at Tesla and their valuation is 20, 30, 40 times their P&Es, 20, 30, 40 times. And you just, you can't, there's no way you can get back to reality when you're paying 30 times earnings to get your money back. You're always going to lose money if you're an investor.
There's a saying, like, it came up, this is where I learned it with Tiger Woods, right? Where you love the game but hate the player. I kind of feel the same way about Mr. Musk. You know, the guy, what he accomplished and is accomplishing is incredible. As a person, I just do not like the man.
Well, good, bad, or indifferent, he's been able to get this people to continue to think tech company.
But you can separate the two. You can separate the game
from
the
player.
Two
things can be true at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Bill Cosby, his comedy was very funny.
But as a human being.
But as a human being,
he was not great.
He's a disgusting human being.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's two things can be true at once.
Yeah.
Probably a very graphic example.
Yes, you went there. You did go there, but I went to, Tiger Woods. But anyway.
Great golfer.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Let's stay with
that. That's a good cigar, man. So we like Michael
Jordan.
Let's
stay with the sports analogy. Anyway, so that's interesting. Yeah. So what you're saying is the stock market is valuing Tesla, and I'm gonna refine this the way that I heard it. They're defining them as a technology company, whereas they're defining Porsche and Toyota and GM as. And then let's face it, the margins
on these
legacy companies is very well known, right? We know how much profit. They've been doing it for 100 years.
To boil it down to even more basic rule level, just understanding of basic of buying and selling a company. Let's say for the sake of discussion, I want to come and I want to buy Road Chaser from you.
Right.
Okay. The way I'm going to value your business is what did you make over the past 3 years? And then what's the liabilities and what assets do you have? I'm going to subtract your liabilities from your assets, and then I'm going to take an average of the 3 years income, and I'm going to add that to the assets, and that's how I value your business.
How about blue sky?
No blue sky?
No blue sky. You didn't give me any blue sky,
no.
Moto Man.
Matter of fact, no blue sky.
Matter
of fact, I'm not going to buy it unless you get rid of that guy, Nathan.
Okay. Talk about blue sky.
Actually, you know what? Get rid of the Russian, too. All right.
All right.
But instead, this is like me coming in and saying, you know what? Because I like you, I'm going to pay you 30 times what you made on average the past 3 years.
Plus another, 30 times for blue sky.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no grounding in reality when you're valuing company. And, I've been through this rodeo before because I was in tech. I remember when Red Hat, if you can remember that
name. I remember
name,
Red Hat, yeah.
They were like 50 times earnings, and they didn't even have earnings at that point.
So that'd be zero. 50 times zero is still zero.
Well, they made like $2 a year.
All right. $100.
Okay. Maybe I'm exaggerating.
All right, let's go back to this list.
Back to the list.
We'll ground you with this list. All right, number eight. This is also not surprising. The Chevrolet Corvette.
Not at all surprising.
19.5% over sticker, $14,697.
Now, we have a lot of history on that one. We can add some color to that discussion.
Yeah, well, the Z06 is coming.
Those are going way over sticker.
Way over.
And I both know somebody who's got one on order.
Yes. Who's that?
Jack.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Jack has got one. Jack was lucky enough to get one at MSRP.
Right.
So congratulations to Joe, our friend Jack.
Congrats, Jack.
But Mark was too cheap to buy it. I'm actually, I don't know if I should have said that. Anyway, forget that if you heard that. Anyway, so back in 2014, remember when the C7 came out?
Mm-hmm.
Those two were going over sticker. Same with the Z06. Those two were going over sticker. And within a year, we're talking the normal car times, normal go in and you negotiate. You know, anybody that knows Corvettes, Malcolm Conner Chevrolet, the biggest like Corvette dealer in the world, you could get them for practically nothing. But for that 1 year, you were paying over sticker.
And then
they all went down a year after, even the Z06.
And here's the crazy part. The Corvette's been now out for almost 3 years.
Crazy.
And they're still selling over sticker.
Yep.
Still selling over sticker.
A buddy of mine bought a used one over sticker, and his car didn't have the Z51. Can you believe that?
Yeah. So I can believe it. I don't understand it, but I can believe it.
The Corvette, there's three things going on. Number one, it was a massive shift in what a Corvette is, going from C7 to C8. So there's that. I think it was a moonshot, because, and it's such a good vehicle.
Front engine, mid engine.
Exactly. Yeah. The demand is there because it's that good of a product. Then number two, you've had, look at the price of everything. Competition, anything that's close to that is so much more expensive. And then number three, the world falling off a cliff. I would argue that the minute the world goes back on the cliff and things get back to normal, those cars become discounted.
Yeah, because
even Z06s.
Yeah, they're not limited, right?
There's
no number that they're not going to build. And like I like to say that, you know, GM and Ford don't make money by not selling cars.
Yeah.
Whereas Ferrari makes money by not selling cars.
To give you an idea, Corvette, they make $25,000 a year.
Yeah,
that's about as rare as glass.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So my prediction there, the minute things start to catch up, the C8 the Stingrays will start to go down, and they'll start to go below MSRP, and you'll start getting regular used car prices. The Z06 will follow about 6 months after that.
So we just did a series which you watched. Thank you. Called from
your best stud, series. From stud I'm not to, just saying this because you bought me lunch.
Okay, it's over at altfl.com. From Stud to Dud, where we took four 90s convertibles and try to figure out who built the best one. Was it the Germans? Was it the Americans? Was it the Japanese? Or was it the British? And you know, we wanted to buy a Corvette, but surprisingly, C4 Corvettes are still...
That one you looked at was a pile of crap.
Yeah, but they're still dirt cheap. You can get a nice C4 Corvette, like you said, because they built so many of them, anywhere from, on the low side for a crappy one, $8,000, maybe $15,000.
Yeah.
And C5s are maybe $5,000 over that.
It's a lot of chair for the money.
It is, but compare that to a similar generational 911, and it's going to be, you know, four or five times that.
Nowhere close.
Yeah.
But the 911 is just, it's a better car.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you can kind of see. So let's keep going.
I'm a little bit disappointed that the Z32 didn't fare as well in that stack up.
Yeah.
A little disappointed. Anyway, go on.
All right. Number eight on our list, and here comes our first Porsche. The Porsche, and it's one of two on this list, Porsche Cayenne.
Not a 911.
No, not a 911 isn't actually on this list. Maybe it's too low volume.
Maybe. Worldwide, they make $25,000 a year.
Really?
Yeah.
How many U.S. do you know?
U.S., they probably wanted, and they did like 1,000 a month. So probably about half of that goes to the U.S.
Okay. Yeah. So the Porsche Cayenne, 19.6% over sticker, $16,750. Now, I would not have expected the Cayenne because, let's face it, they're pretty – I hate to use the word common, but they're pretty common. You see a lot of them. You see them everywhere. Old Cayennes, first-generation Cayennes, those things sell for nothing, dude.
Yeah.
If you see one over $10,000, run fast because you can get those things for like $5,000 to $8,000 all day long because you get that problem where they're so complicated that you get upside down immediately.
Yeah. So this is where we get into, again, inside baseball. So number one, Porsche in particular got hit very hard by the chips. Number two, they also recently got hit by a strike in their plants.
Oh.
So they're having a problem. They were just getting around the chips, and then the strike hit them. And then, remember the boat that sank?
Yeah, that's a lot
that
of Porsches.
That was Volkswagen Group, and it was a lot of Porsches.
Yeah.
So they've had kind of and like a trifecta of bad news.
And rebuilt
news.
Those. Ones, the ones
they did. That, yeah. Actually, a guy you and I both know got his car rebuilt.
Yeah, he had to go rebuild.
So this is not just people are buying them because of the virus. There's a lot of bad situation, this trifecta of bad luck hit Porsche in particular, which will bring the other one on the list as well.
Wiring harnesses came out of the Ukraine. Not a great place
so
at the moment.
I recently had Bart Herring. Remember Bart Herring?
Yeah.
but ran product in the U.S. He now runs product and sales. He's in Canada. They're grooming him to be one of the bosses of Mercedes. Super smart guy.
Yeah, I like Bart a lot.
Bart is good. Yeah, and he's very honest.
Yeah, sharp guy, really.
So I'm going to do a quick plug
runner.
For me.
He's a runner.
He's a runner, and
yes.
He's a drummer.
Yes.
A quick plug for me. I have his interview on my channel. You can go check that out, Motoman TV. And he shared with me everything that was impacted by the Ukraine war. It's not just the wiring harnesses. Turns out there's a certain gas that's required to make chips. And
really?
Like 80% of that comes from the Ukraine.
Oh, gosh. Who would have thunk?
Who would have thunk
yeah,
this?
Yeah, who would have thunk?
And he came up with this great saying, and I'll never forget it. He goes, over the past 2 years, I've learned to be thankful for the problems that I have.
Yeah, yeah. True
and
that,
that's
man.
The case here. Be yeah. thankful for the problems you got in the case of Porsche.
All right. So let's keep going because this list is, I wouldn't call it the people's cars, but they're not like, you know, they're not GT3s.
Yeah.
All right. At number seven, we've got one of your favorite cars, I believe, the Cadillac CT5, 19.9%.
Are they differentiating a V or a Blackwing or anything
like that? I'm just saying CT5. So
that would tell me that it's probably a basic car, which surprises
that
me.
That would be surprising. I wonder if it is like a V. Because I can't see a regular CT5 selling.
Well, is it a V or a Blackwing?
Don't know.
So let's look at this two ways. If it's just the Blackwing, duh.
Yeah.
Because what, did they make 500 of them last
yeah,
year?
Yeah, I know.
In 2023, they're only going to make 120? Like, that's money in the bank. Let's say it's the CT5V, not the Blackwing. I'm going to take a stab in the dark here. How many choices do you have to buy a sedan nowadays? You got a 5 Series. You got an E-Class. That's about it. You can buy the Audi. They have the same problem that Porsche has. There's probably less Audis than there are Porsches.
You can buy a Camry or an Accord.
No, I mean
oh, premium.
Rear-wheel drive, premium.
Okay. All right. Yeah, yeah. All right, fair enough.
So, there's no guarantee here. Don't go to Vegas on these numbers. I think this is a function of you don't have any competition anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
Plus the virus.
When we were talking to Toyota, right? They're going to, you know, double down on Camrys because they think that as time rolls on, there'll be fewer and fewer. And I think.
Well, Hyundai and Kia pulled the plug on their cars. So
yeah.
They were right.
And Ford a long time ago.
Let me tell you something. If I'm going to bet, I'm going to always bet on Toyota.
Yeah.
It's like Wesley Snipes. Always bet on black, always bet on Toyota.
And they're saying that, you know, they still see the sedan market in hundreds of thousands annually.
They're right.
Yeah. And so as fewer and fewer people are. Companies, manufacturers are in that segment or that space, you know, their car is going to become more dominant.
I'm surprised Hyundai and Kia gave up.
I am too, actually. You're right. Because Hyundai and Kia is doing really well right now.
They have amazing products in that segment, and they pulled the plug on really good product. And they were selling.
Maybe EV6, Ioniq 6. Right, those are sedans.
You saw it in person. I didn't think it was very attractive.
It's weird. It's a weird car. Like
I'm holding judgment until I see it in person.
It's
but
like
you went there.
The front's a little Porsche-like. The back's a little bit, Infiniti-like. It's a weird kind of.
That's what I don't like. It looks like a J30.
There's a little bit of J30 in the back.
J30.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. But once again, it's a sedan.
Yeah.
You know, and it's more of a traditional sedan, sort of kind of. It still has that. Yeah. Hatchback instead of the...
So a huge disclaimer I want to say here. On the CT5,
yeah.
The minute the virus problem goes away, that becomes a car you can get discounted.
Well, Cadillac is also, you know, that's another company that's in this big transition from going, might as well talk about this now. I'm going to ask you this because I've been dying to get your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. All right? I really want to know what you think of this. We're living through...
Yes, New York City is better than Chicago.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
And the Chicago pizza deep dish is much better
than
that.
You don't have pizza, you have quiche.
No.
That's what it is.
No, and you don't have pizza. You have crackers with tomato sauce on them.
Quiche.
Which would you rather have? A cracker with tomato sauce?
Any day.
All right.
Back to the real question.
We're living through this transition
right now
from internal combustion to electrification. And there are a lot of people.
Discussion for another day.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I want to get your opinion. There are a lot of people who think that electric vehicles are being forced, which is true to some extent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that electrification is going to save the planet, which.
It ain't.
Which we don't know.
It ain't.
Okay. So do you think that we should be. I'm not going to go forced, but certainly funding this transition by giving people rebates, or should it just be the market should decide which of the two technologies people want or which of the two technologies suits people better? Where are you on that?
So I've discussed this with many folks.
Yes.
On camera, on the record. And I am a big believer that we should not be giving welfare to rich people.
Okay.
People that buy Taycans, people that were the same people that the first people
like,
that
like our
bought,
Hummer EV?
Exactly.
Actually, that doesn't
qualify. They were the same people that were the first ones to buy the Prius.
Yeah.
They're the ones paying $10,000 over sticker for Ioniq 5s. There is no reason that the U.S. government should be giving them a tax credit for $7,500, $5,000, $2,000, whatever it is. It should be what the market decides. And to answer your other question, which you left in the subtext there, yes, I do believe EVs are being forced down our throat. At least the pace of change is being forced down our throat.
So I have a very simple belief.
Yeah.
I believe that if you give people $7,000 toward a car, mm-hmm. that car immediately becomes $7,000 more expensive.
Oh, absolutely.
So basically all you're doing is subsidizing.
Well, there is that part as well. I totally agree. That's where we get into the whole school debt debacle thing.
But you see what
yes,
I'm saying, right?
Totally.
Because like there's a perfect example of that, and Ford will tell you that is unfortunate timing. But, you know, the week after they passed the latest bill, Ford upped the price of the Lightning by $7,000.
Absolutely.
Which happens to be exactly how much money you would save.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this might be a little political, but why are colleges more expensive than they were 20 years ago? This is exactly why. Yeah.
All right. So let's keep going on this list. What's our next one here? Jeep Wrangler Unlimited.
That's you would know more about this than me.
Yes, I can actually speak to this hopefully intelligently. 20%, 8,877. So what blew my mind, Moto Man, was when Jeep sold almost 250,000 units in 1 year of the Wrangler, not of the Grand Cherokee.
Like recently?
Yeah, like 2 years ago.
They sell that many?
It was like 247,000 Wranglers.
I had no idea the volumes were that high.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like,
they're not cheap vehicles.
No, they're not cheap. And people only buy the Rubicon because not that they go off-road, but if you're going to get one, you want the Rubicon, right? You want the Red Shocks, you want the
Ralph must be making a ton of money right now.
I love the brand, but out of all the vehicles, this is a singularly focused off-roader, which means it's just unstoppable, incredible off-road, but on-road, it's not great, right? It's a brick into the wind. The seating position is straight up. You know, your windshield is straight up in front of you.
Is the Bronco better in that case?
Yes, Bronco's better. Yeah, I think they learned that lesson. Mm. But nevertheless, so you've got this car that is not very comfortable and very... I'm gonna say daily driver friendly, and yet people are buying it as daily drivers because 99% of people aren't taking these things off road on a regular basis. You know, some aspire to it and some come out here and do it, but if you live in New York, you're not going to be taking it off road. Where are you going to take it off road? Or Florida, same thing, right?
That's a stupid question. Again, I don't know a lot about the Jeep market like you do. Of 100% that are sold in the country, how many are actually taken off road?
Like I said.
Just New York.
If I say 10%, I'm probably being high.
Yeah, see, that's what I would think too.
Yeah, nobody's taking these things off road.
So is it worth the 20% over?
So here's what I think is happening, right? I think there's been a fundamental shift, and I think it's also generational, in terms of what people want out of their car. So me and you have always wanted a car that performed well for however we wanted to do it, that was reliable, that was, I think, cost effective for our lives, right? But now vehicles have become much more of a statement of who you are as a person or who you want to be. You see what I'm saying? So it doesn't you're not figuring in the stuff that we would figure in. What you're thinking about is, you know, how, and I'm holding, for those of you who are listening to this, I'm holding up my camera on my phone and doing, you know, the typical selfie, right? With the Jeep in the background. This is what people want now, right? Look at me. I'm with my Jeep in wherever I'm at, and I can share it and I can pass it along because I'm an outdoorsy, active person. And so lifestyle vehicles have become much more dominant and much more predominant than just the bread and butter kind of vehicles. Because some people buy cars like toasters, right? Like we said earlier, they're just appliances that they use to transport themselves. But over the last maybe 10 years, there's been this fundamental shift where the vehicle and what it says about you is more important than what it does.
I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. And people heard my statements previously. Doesn't mean I'm anti-EV. I actually am a big proponent of EV, but not for the reasons that everybody is either being told or force-fed through the governments and media. To me, I see it as it changes your daily schedule. It changes your lifestyle because you're no longer wasting time looking for energy throughout the day. You go home, you plug it in. The next day, you get in the car and you go, and it's 100% on the go. You don't have to spend time looking for refilling energy, wasting either 5 or 10 minutes. That's the reason why I like them. However, there's another benefit. I firmly believe that by having these different, which the industry refers to as skateboards, the platforms underneath them, you can make vehicles like this Hummer, or you can make a reissue of, I'll make it up, a Scout, because you've already put the development into a vehicle that underpins a mass market crossover. Guess what? I'm going to use the same stuff that I have underneath the ID4, and that's what's going to underpin the Scout.
So here's, I think, where we are in agreement, and I think also that the politicization, I can't even say it, of the electric vehicle is doing a disservice, because let me kind of give you this idea, okay?
If I were
to come to you, and I would say, I can sell you a vehicle for a little bit more than the vehicle that you're currently driving. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be two huge advantages. Okay, first and foremost, you can power it at home. So you never have to go to another gas station.
Love that.
Okay. And secondly, not only can you power it at home, but it's going to cost you probably on average 75% less than you're paying currently.
I'm going to tell you, I don't believe you, because at some point you're going to jack the rates up on me once everybody makes the switch.
But today it's
today it is.
Yeah.
But
all right.
Don't buy that one.
And then to depoliticize it, it's powered by hamster farts, right?
Hamster farts.
Yeah, exactly. It's powered.
Okay.
I think most people, if you told them that, would be like, "Yeah, I want that vehicle." But because it's powered by electricity, then all of a sudden the conversation immediately turns political, and it's about whether I believe in climate change, whether I don't believe in climate change, whether, you know, 14-year-old kids are mining cobalt in Africa. There's all this other stuff that like gets thrown into it. But I'm saying, as a technology, as a technology, if I were to say to you, you can have this vehicle, you can charge, the gas station becomes your home, and right now it's 75% less costly to fill this thing up, and it does everything that your current vehicle does, plus it's an added benefit, it's a lot quicker. A lot quicker.
So you bring up a good point there.
But hamster farts.
No, seriously, that's the problem. Hamster farts. Because what's happening...
Giant factory hamster farming?
Might as well have Sasquatch farts in there while we're at it.
All the methane is coming out of the hamster's butts.
Okay, now we're really going off the plantation at this point.
Think about this. If it's powered by hamster farts and you close your garage, you won't die. You can keep it running. You may stink yourself.
Yeah, but your garage will smell like blue cheese at that point.
It will, yes.
Okay, back to the topic at hand, okay. Roman. Let's focus here. It's funny. It's like no matter how old we get, poop and fart jokes, they still kill. That's just the reality of it. Anyway, back to the point that you brought up. Before you even posed that question to me, I answered it. Okay. I said to you, I love EVs, not because of the promise of hamster farts. I love it. I can't believe we're going off a tangent about hamster farts. Anyway, I love it because I don't have to waste time looking for energy. That everybody can buy into. The problem is governments, some OEMs that are being forced by the governments, and a lot of the media are selling you this idea of hamster farts are clean energy. And what they've done is we're going to put this entire industry on this track to move over faster than it should. And the way I like to describe it is they want us to make a jump, and we're on a dock, but the boat is over there, and they want us to jump over to the boat. Guess what's going to happen? We're going to end up in the water.
So
how about we get the boat closer to the dock before we make the jump?
I agree. Let's put a
And that takes the politics out.
Let's put some facts and a number to this, right?
Happy to.
Right now, 75%-ish of our energy that we use comes from
coal.
Non-renewables, basically.
Yeah.
And if you're in Alaska, it's 95%.
Yes.
So you're right. If 75% of the energy comes from, you know, not from solar or wind or geothermal or whatever, right?
Yep.
But from coal and oil and gas, right, then you're...
Geothermal is very cool tech, by the way.
Yeah,
simple,
Iceland.
But very cool.
Did you know that the reason that a lot of aluminum is smelted in Iceland is because they have this enormous, it takes a lot of power to smelt.
Yeah.
And they have enormous amounts of energy in
Iceland.
Fascinating
technology to me, yeah.
Yeah.
Go on what you're saying before.
Anyway, I agree. You're right. It's a lot of that energy comes from non-renewables right now.
Yeah. And what's happening
there's one interesting thing, right?
Yeah.
So there's also this problem that people – here's something that you probably know, but a lot of people may not know.
Yeah.
So the other argument you get is that the grid can't support it, which may or may not be true. We don't know, yeah. Right? We have a really interesting system here in America, and that is it's completely decentralized by these utilities, which are these pseudo public private organizations, right?
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of them, if not thousands of them, and so everyone is its own little fiefdom. So that's a whole nother conversation that people never get into. But did you know that when the Model T was first built by Henry Ford, there were no gas stations, none, zero, zip.
Yeah.
The infrastructure came after. The infrastructure came after the car.
Yes.
So I think I have a strong suspicion that in this country, the same thing will happen with electrification.
But the issue is not the infrastructure. Yeah, we'll fix the infrastructure problem.
Yeah.
Elon, bringing our conversation full circle, Elon showed we can solve that problem. The problem is the grid. The grid can't support it. If we even hit 5% of the volumes the U.S. government and Brussels wants us to hit in EVs, we will become the dark ages.
But I'm saying when the Model T came out, there was no grid. There was nothing.
You don't need a grid in that case.
You know how it worked? There were people with like farms, right, that had farm equipment that used gas, and that's how they would – so it was farmers like –
But there was already – so the infrastructure wasn't there, but the grid of refining oil was. That was already there.
To some extent, yes, was there.
Exactly.
To some extent.
You had it in,
but you still, you
back
still,
in the day, you still, had it in logistics.
You still had to create the grid of getting the oil from the refinery to the gas station, which did not exist. So you had to still create that entire network of that's where like these oil companies became very wealthy,
yes.
Right? Yeah. Anyway.
But in the case.
I see what you're saying. It's a fair point. Yeah.
What we're trying to do now is we're trying to thread the needle on seven different problems at the same time. And the reality is it doesn't take 13 years to do that, it takes 35 years to do that, and government doesn't understand that. Like, for example...
Well, government does it poorly.
Government does everything poorly.
And, exactly.
And again, this is one of these things, let the market decide, and I would argue there are some car manufacturers that are better at this than others. Like, Toyota is not buying into this, everything's going to be electric by 2035, and they're hedging their bets. Yesterday, I was...
I wish a car company besides Tesla would actually build out... Now, forget electrification. How about their own hydrogen infrastructure? Wouldn't that be cool?
Actually, the governments and OEMs are starting to admit that hydrogen infrastructure is good for... over the road trucking.
Yeah, exactly.
And especially at some point, over the road trucking. Which means they're setting the goal for that to be the case. Anyway, there's a point I wanted to make. It really, really, I would say, encapsulates what's happening here. I've got this old saying where don't bother me with the facts. My mind is already made up. That's the government. Yesterday, I think it was yesterday, I was watching, I think, NPR or something like that. And Rashida Tlaib, who represents where Ford is, Dearborn. So this woman, her biggest constituent is one of the biggest car manufacturers in the world. She is interviewing all of the heads of what I would say the five crime families, but all the investment banks. So she asks Jamie Dimon, who runs Chase and has run Chase. And by the way, he's Greek.
Great name, by the way.
Yeah, Jamie Dimon, exactly. She says, How did she say it? She goes... do you have restrictions on any of your investments in creating new sources of petroleum, basically recreating new sources of oil?
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying, are you still investing in oil? And he says, no, and that would be a path to hell for this country if we did.
Hmm.
Finally, someone stood up to the government and said, your facts aren't lined up with what the reality is. And I took my hat off to him, and not just because he's Greek.
Okay. You sure? You sure it's not because you're Greek
so
as well?
So here's this woman. She's spouting off this stuff that, yeah, it's great intentions, but the reality doesn't match the intention.
Well, so the biggest problem with this conversation, and not our conversation, but the national conversation, is it's so full of...
Our conversation is great because it's Hampshire for us.
It is good, yes. It's so full of, like, misinformation. You know what I mean? There's so much on both sides of the spectrum, right, where it's hard to get at the facts because media companies specifically have figured out that the only way you make a lot of money is by preaching to the choir.
And getting people pissed off. I was on a podcast.
So you do one or two things. You justify, or you reinforce their beliefs because that's what people want.
Exactly.
Right? Or you point the finger at the other side and say,
get them angry.
That's the only way.
I was on a podcast a couple of weeks ago in Canada, and we were chatting about this. And what I had proposed is it sounds crazy simple, but it's super hard to pull off. You cut off the very extreme left and the very extreme right, and things start to happen again.
I think that's
effectively what we need.
I think maybe that's happening right now just naturally because, reading between the lines, it seems like that both extremes are now kind of on the way out, right? Most people just want politicians to be back. You know, I used to be a TV reporter, right? And it was very frustrating interviewing politicians because they would never say anything. It was just you'd ask them a question, a very direct question, and they would basically just give you a non-answer.
Yeah.
And I just long for those days, right? I long, you know, just give me a politician who just, you know, obfuscates.
Has cigars and interns in the White House.
I'll go for that too. Yeah, yeah. And hedges their bets. But just a normal politician, which I understand, versus the person then who has to compare everything to Nazis or you know what I mean, where it just goes completely like social media friendly.
As someone who speaks German and studied German history, no one knows what a Nazi is anymore.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, that is a never truer word spoken. All right, let's keep going down this list before we get too far down the Nazi rattle.
Yeah, this was supposed to be about paying over sticker on cars, and this has become a debate on politics and hamster farts. Please make that the title of this episode.
Genesis GV70, 22%.
Good car.
Beautiful car.
Oh, man, great driving car.
I know, yeah.
That is a better experience in terms of driving than a BMW 3 Series.
Once again, Hyundai, Kia.
They're killing it.
Yeah, it seems like... This seems self-explanatory, but just build a car people want to buy, and you'll do well, right? Just build a car people want to buy.
That's what Bob Lutz said for 50 years. Agreed. And he finally made it happen when in his last years at General Motors.
Yeah. Number two on the list, another Porsche, the Macan, or is it Macan?
Macan.
The Macan, which is basically a smaller version of the Cayenne.
You know what? That is a misnomer. Most people think of it as it's Macan, then you step up to a Cayenne.
Yeah.
I would argue it's which size Porsche SUV experience do you want?
You sound like a manufacturer.
But it's the truth because I've driven them. I mean, my viewers know I'm a Porsche freak.
Yeah.
I've driven so many of them in so many different parts of the world, in so many different configurations. You can get a Macan that's specced out more expensive than an expensive Cayenne. So it's really which one do you want?
GTS with all the bells and whistles.
Oh, no, the one to have is the GT.
The GT.
The GT was 630 horse, 630 horsepower.
And the chrono
horsepower.
Package.
Stupid fast. In another episode, I'm going to be beating this guy up about a certain Porsche.
Okay.
Two Porsches.
Fair enough. All right. And number one, obviously, it's up there again. This is now the regular Jeep Wrangler, not the Unlimited.
I
think we missed, actually, we missed a bunch. Number five was the Ford Bronco, and number four was the Lexus RX 450H.
So that's very popular car. Because that car is being replaced.
Yeah, that's the most – that car represents the RX, at least 50% of all Lexus sales, right? They have like one car that everyone wants.
And when we were on the same drive, I was surprised to learn that – so most of these car companies, when they have a car, it's competitive. Like the Camry sells – they own 10% of the market, and then the Nissan owns 8% of the market. It's a small differential in that segment. The RX, the X5, the GLE, these guys are like 10 points ahead everybody else.
I know. They're killing. My wife had one.
Literally, they crap on the doorstep of every other manufacturer.
Yeah. What? Why? What's the magic there?
I think this is a guy living in Los Angeles telling you this. I think that car is so bulletproof. It's so comfortable to drive. It's like a comfortable pair of jeans.
It's also the right size.
People come and they buy it. They keep it for 20 years, they give it to their kids, and they tear another one off the roll.
Yeah.
So that's why this one, at the end of its product life cycle...
Built on a Camry originally.
Built originally on a Camry, now on an Avalon.
Yeah.
So they They buy them. They're so reliable. And why screw with success so they go and get another one? I think that's why this one at the end of its life cycle is still selling so well. Now, I want to go back to the other one that you know more about. What do you think the Bronco, after the virus garbage happens, goes away and we have chips again, will the Bronco finally be below our MSRP, or is it always going to be super hard to get?
Once again, I think Ford doesn't make money by not building cars, so they will build to demand. And at some point, you know that they're thinking ahead that way because they just came out with like a Heritage Edition, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason you do editions is to create
buzz on it.
Right? And so I think they see where it's going, and because they're going to crank a lot of them out. So I think it will go to MSRP, and at some point it'll go. Because it's the other problem that you end up with is we have a Bronco. It's a great car, but the reality is never as good as the anticipation of what it could be, right?
Unless so it's a 911 GT3.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah,
that's the truth.
Yeah, but it's a good car, but it's not like the second coming of Christ, you know?
I agree.
Yeah, so I think at some point...
So at some point you think it'll get back to reality. Yeah. You'll be able to walk in a dealer and say, I'll give you 25 out the door right now.
Yeah, I think... So we never answered that question. Should people buy cars now or should they wait? I would say wait. If you don't have to...
How much more time do we have to answer that question?
Well, we're already at an hour. So we're actually... 5 more minutes. Okay. Go for it.
I think this is a question of your personal situation.
Yeah.
So if you are someone who is gainfully employed, that is in a stable company, or you are have a stable income situation, where, like, let's say for the sake of discussion, you own a couple of apartment buildings,
sure.
Or you work for
relatively guaranteed income.
Relatively guaranteed income, and you have no debt. Mm-hmm. I would say it would be a great opportunity to try to find an opportunity where you can buy something at sticker or below for a car you want to keep for a while. Now, I can't resist. I have to espouse my Dave Ramsey beliefs. I firmly believe that one should not be buying a brand new car unless they have a net worth of $1 million and above, meaning no debt. And net worth of $1 million above doesn't mean you're making $1 million a year. It means
your house and
your net worth is $1 million and you are making money annually, whether it's from passive income.
You just bummed out like 95% of the people.
But here's why I say this. We are about to get into some serious pain. Just 2 days ago, Jerome Powell came out, not only
Chairman of the Fed,
so 12 people that run the monetary, well, they don't necessarily run all the monetary policy. The U.S. Treasury is the one that prints the money. But the 12 governors, Board of Governors, Jerome Powell, who is the leader, they not only raised the rates, meaning what they loan money to each bank, they raised the rates 75 basis points. But this is the first time where he started to sound like Paul Volcker, who was the guy that got us out of the recessions of the 70s. He said, A, we're raising rates. B, we're going to raise rates again 2 more times at least this year, which means all the way through the end of the year. Most likely we're going to raise it another 50 basis points next month and the month after. And then here's the real kicker. He flat out said, we are going to expect job losses.
Yeah, because what that does is individuals and businesses now have a much more it's much more expensive for them to borrow money, basically. Much more expensive.
And that leads to a couple of things. When it's expensive to borrow money, that A means you don't have that line of credit to access, which means the guy who's running a company, a mid-sized company, is going to start putting people on the street. Or B, the companies that have been in business over the past 2 years, even though the economy's been all over the place, they've raised money because of crazy markets. Now markets are going to start to get back to reality. That means these companies that haven't, frankly, been making any money won't be able to go to capital markets, get more money, which means people are going to be put on the street. And not just the blue-collar worker, but the white-collar, basically they call it the laptop class. The laptop class, the person who was at home for the past 2.5 years that was ordering DoorDash and buying a new Lexus RX over sticker, that person is probably going to lose their job. So if you're in a class where you're at a company that's has speculative financing at best, you have a lot of personal debt within your household, I would strongly suggest you do not buy a new car at any price right now, or a used car for that matter.
There you go. That's a great answer. All right, guys. Well, we have burned through this hour and more of The podcast. You will be back next week for the next episode. Well, we'll be talking more about specific car companies like Mercedes
and EVs.
So make sure you go check out Motoman TV.
Motoman TV, all one word, and all the socials, and on YouTube.
And on YouTube. And as always, head over to alltfl.com for more news, views, and of course, Motoman TV podcast. See you guys next time. Ciao.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.